Species.
Unite.
Species.
Unite.
Producing food, wholesome, healthy food, is a hell of a lot of work. And this is where we've got massive problems coming because, well, firstly, the average age of a farmer in the UK is 59 years old. The average age of a farmer in the US is 57 and a half years old. And in Japan, it's 67. They're almost nearly retired. Who is going to be producing our food in the next few years?
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Rich Hardy. Rich is a former undercover investigator. He spent 20 years doing over 100 assignments in 30 countries. He's been on the podcast before to talk about his time undercover. If you haven't heard that episode, you should go back and listen. He's back this time to talk about his next adventure. After a couple of decades of incredibly intense investigative work, Rich decided he needed a whole new life. Instead of campaigning against the horrors of animal agriculture, he and his partner, Prue, are now campaigning for solutions. Last year, they became vegan farmers. I didn't even know vegan farming was a thing. And what surprised me even more was that I didn't know that almost all fruit and vegetable farming isn't vegan. Rich, thank you so much for being here today. It's awesome to have you back.
Yeah, I'm really pleased to be back. I've been a big fan of Species Unite, actually, since I've come on the show previously. I've been, fair few friends and colleagues have been on the program, and I don't get to see them that often these days, so it's nice hearing them through the medium of Species Unite.
I love it. I love that. Thank you. So for people who didn't hear you come on the first time, I want to just talk about a little bit about your last life. And because it was a big one and an intense one, will you give us some background on your life as an undercover investigator?
Yeah, so vegan since childhood, always been involved with campaigning, but got into undercover investigations at the tail end of the 1990s. After basically getting really disillusioned with trying to talk to politicians about changing laws for farm animals. And one of the things they told me was, show me some real evidence, show me some imagery, and that might, help your case in terms of getting new laws in place for farm animals. So I ditched all the political talk, got some cameras and went undercover. And I thought it would just be, something I did for a little while just to, make a little bit of a difference. But, it turned out I did it for 20 years. That culminated in finishing just a couple of years ago. And then I was starting to look about what next, what comes next. And that brought me to vegan farming.
Vegan farming. And I have a few questions about this transition because it's been a couple of years, right, since you've been out of the investigation world. Because you've been going kind of nonstop for 20 years, assignment after assignment. Mm. What did it feel like to just stop after that?
It was a huge relief, firstly, to stop. And one of the reasons was that more groups were getting established, investigation units, more funding going into it, more training of the next generation investigators. And it was a sort of an easy decision in the end for me to say, I don't have to do this anymore myself. The movement is, really investing in this. And, we got a great lot of people coming through to do that work. So didn't have to do it anymore on that front. But, I was really mentally and physically exhausted from doing the work. And I needed a change. But, once you've been campaigning for so long, it's really challenging, moving on to something entirely different. So I had my rescue animals. So my partner and I, and my partner Prue is also a campaigner actually for the Humane League here in the UK. And we spend our time looking after rescued animals. And alongside that, we were thinking, well, what else can we do? And we didn't want to be doing as much sort of work based on like showing the problems, which is what we've done a lot of. We wanted to kind of move into more like the solution side of things, encouraging people to, you know, embrace vegan food, cut factory farming and big ag out of their lives for good. And we both had an interest in like growing, you know, we were small scale vegetable growers just for fun. And we thought, well, you know, why not try and set up as like market gardeners, have a small farm, but do it like completely vegan. And when we say vegan for the type of farming that we do, we mean veganically, which is vegan plus organic equals veganic.
I think most people think anyone who's growing vegetables is a vegan farmer, right? I mean, that's like kind of,
yeah,
seems like that's how it would be.
Yeah.
So will you talk about why that's not the case?
It's so not the case.
Pretty much like 99% of farms are not vegan, right?
Yeah. I mean, so many farms that grow vegetables are, well, they're big operations, big horticultural operations. And a lot of the inputs that they're using to grow vegetables have an animal aspect to them. So particularly with propagation of plants and adding fertility to the soil, a great deal of that fertility is being added through animal manures, bone, blood, fish, meal, feathers processed down as meal, shell, cow horns, chicken manure. It's a pretty big list of byproducts that come from factory farming or the slaughter industry. So the starting point for a lot of our wholesome vegetables has that aspect to it. And, you know, trying to buck the trend on that is, you know, something that's, I would say, you know, not very well established at the moment. But there is a small movement, you know, of sort of vegan farmers out there that are trying to farm on a small scale, like a market garden scale, running community supported agricultural schemes to supply veg and fruit to the local communities, based on vegan farming. But to be honest, I've only met a few of them, and that's not even in the UK. Those few are spread out, you know, across the world. There's a small sort of like sharing of knowledge between us, I would say, but there are one or two that have been doing it, you know, a good while and have learned a lot from it and can pass on their skills to like newbies like me. Hopefully we can start, you know, telling a bit of storytelling around it and starting a new conversation.
You and Prue, you knew nothing when you started, right? About
pretty much, yeah. We just done a little backyard kind of veg growing sort of scheme, like bit of trial and error. You know, some things grew, some things didn't. But you know, if you're going to upscale that to a small business, then yeah, you can't afford for that to happen. We started pretty much from fresh, and got loads of books. You know, sort of cut out the pages that had like bits about, you know, veganic agriculture, and started putting them up around ourselves and going out there and finding us a site where we could do all this. So that was about a year ago, and we've just sort of finished our first growing season. Now I'm starting to prep for our second season.
And the site, is it somewhere close to you?
Yeah, so we're based in Cornwall, that like tiny, tiny little peninsula in the very southwest of England. Next stop, New York. So we're right out on the fringe of England, and we are growing in, yeah, pretty mild climate, but you know, it's by no means, you know, a climate that we can grow everything. So we have a good mix of vegetables and salads and fruits that we can grow for about sort of 30 weeks of the year. And that's kind of what we base our weekly box scheme deliveries to people on.
And take me through kind of the differences between what you're doing and somebody who's not doing a vegan farm.
Well, one of the first things that we found difficult was actually finding a site that wasn't already connected to animal agriculture in some way, because a lot of farming and market gardeners are renting land off existing agricultural operations. Finding a piece of land that didn't have that attached to it was the sort of first stage. But when we did find that, We then had to, you know, plan where we were going to get our materials to cut out all these animal inputs that, you know, traditionally people use to grow vegetables in. We're really close to the beach, so we go and harvest seaweed. We've got permission from a local harbour to do that. So it's like quite an old technique of laying seaweed and kelp on the land. We do as much sort of salvaging and recycling as possible, actually, and it's all quite circular. So we also go and get green waste composts. They're like plant materials that people cut down every year from their back gardens when everything gets a bit too woody and a bit too overgrown. They take it to the local recycling centres and it kind of gets treated there and, you know, builds up a kind of compost, which we then use to like integrate that with the seaweeds. And then we also use like green manures, which are crops that you kind of plant between your vegetables and fruit after you've harvested, and they build fertility back into the soil. They put nitrogen back in, which you've taken. So it's, yeah, we're trying to be as kind of like circular as possible in making good of other people's wastes and putting it to use on our farm. So we're not picking up the phone to the local broiler farm saying, yeah, can you dump, you know, 50 tons of chicken manure onto our land in preparation for us to grow vegetables. That's just something we'd never do.
But you're going out and getting the seaweed and getting the kelp. So like everything you do, you guys are doing on your own.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work is what I'm getting at.
I tell you what, food is, producing food, wholesome, healthy food is a hell of a lot of work. And this is where we've got massive problems coming because, well, firstly, the average age of a farmer in the UK is 59 years old. The average age of a farmer in the US is 57 and a half years old. And in Japan, it's 67. They're almost nearly retired. Who is going to be producing our food in the next few years? Because young people, they're not coming through to become farmers. They want to be moving to the city. They're not moving to rural areas. So we have a big food security story coming up about how and where we're going to get our food. Frankly, you know, food has been something we've just not given enough interest in for so long. I know we're interested in it as vegans from the animal side of things, but you know, go back a few steps and you know, there's a lot we should be concerned about, even as vegans, about how food is produced. And even vegan food, you know, vegan fast food, highly processed food coming out of big monocrops, monocultures, big fields of wheat, GM wheat, same with soy. You know, these are all ingredients for our kind of vegan junk food that is at risk from a number of issues. Yeah, they're creating a great deal of biodiversity loss. They're wrecking the soils. So we have really big problems coming up for food. And it's something we should really, really be thinking very seriously about. I think personally that we need more small scale local agriculture, you know, community farms, ideally vegan. That's obviously what we're pushing, but that's producing more wholesome food that's getting into people's kitchens within just a few miles. We deliver to our customers 3 hours within it being picked. So same day, it's in their kitchens.
That's amazing.
But that's, you know, that's highly unusual. But that's because we're building a model around like a local community. We're not looking to transport our food out of a 10-mile radius. It's small-scale agriculture that is big on protecting local wildlife and big on punching like really healthy food into people's plates.
How does it protect wildlife?
So the problem that we have with a lot of vegan food, like, you know, coming out of corn, GM soy, is that it's incredibly destructive. It's a lot of chemicals and pesticides still going into that product unless it's organic. A lot of vegan food isn't organic. And as a result of that, you know, it's very destructive from a wildlife perspective. So much wildlife is under threat from pesticides and chemical use globally in producing food. But also, you know, we're destroying all the habitat for wildlife. So on our farm, for example, we have really like native, really lovely native hedgerows surrounding our 1 acre site. And yeah, they're our biggest allies, those hedgerows. They're actually our neighbors. All those little birds, all those little voles and mice, all the toads, all the snakes, they're all hopping, slithering, darting out of those hedgerows into our plot and into our vegetable beds. And you know, that's okay. They're our neighbors, they get their share, but they help us. They really help us. They are, you know, taking out, you know, slugs and snails and little cutworms and leather jackets that would otherwise be damaging the crops. There's no such thing as pests on our farm. The only thing that is a pest is when the supermarket truck rolls past, you know, on the little road near us, you know, taking food that's come from all over the world, wrapped up in plastic and, you know, coated with this, you know, glossy sheen of chemical residue. It's just the antithesis of what we do. So we embrace all the wildlife. They're our neighbors. And I think, you know, if we don't have that wildlife, you know, we're not going to have anything to pollinate our crops, you know?
Right. Right. No, it's awesome. And what does it mean that you guys are a no-dig farm?
Yeah, so this is maybe a bit more of a newer thing. Well, if veganic wasn't new enough, we wouldn't.
if you weren't trying to make it as difficult as possible for
yourself. Yeah, we're not digging the ground either, which I guess to a lot of people seems, what, you're not digging the ground? So we don't plow, we don't turn over, we don't till, as you say in the US. And we just build up layers of composts, mulch, with wood chip, with green waste compost, with seaweed. And we plant into that. We use just like hand tools, push seeders, hose. That's kind of all we use, really. We like keep our oil consumption down as much as possible too. But yeah, by not disturbing the soil from digging, you're actually like protecting, you know, everything that makes up the composition of the soil. You know, all the crucial insects that live in there, you know, the structure, you're not like treading on it, you're not like compressing it. Big tractors do that, you know, they really compress the soil and it's really difficult then for the roots of the plants to like, you know, get in there and get established and get all those nutrients. So that's how we're doing it. And it works.
Like,
it
works. I guess that's more vegan anyway, too, because when you have big trucks and plows and all that, they're like whatever little animals are in there getting run over. And, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, where could you end with this conversation? I mean,
yeah, no, it's true.
It's like, I don't want to be like freaking everyone out with this by any means, but I'm trying to show that it's possible to grow veganically, you know, to use organic techniques that don't damage the soil, produce healthy food, you know, on the same level as bigger farms, and, you know, using a lot less inputs and a lot less oil as well. I mean, agriculture's, you know, run on oil, and, you know, oil's running out too. So I think we have to be thinking about this approach to like protecting our food system in the future. But you know what? One of the best things I've done is do this, because not only has it really helped me recover from undercover investigative work, it's really rebuilt my mental health. It's a really fit and healthy occupation, although I'm not completely full-time on it. I hope I will be full-time on it. It's been groundbreaking without being groundbreaking.
Without digging.
Yeah.
Talk me through, like, what's a day like as a vegan farmer? You guys are 25 weeks a year. That means you're growing 25 weeks a year.
Yeah. We're growing 25 weeks a year, but then there's preparation like either side of that and at the end of the season as well. So, yeah, we start the season like in mid-February, you know, getting our seeds on. And then we start planting around mid-March. We got our first crops coming out sort of like April, May. And then we're kind of like full on right through till like November. And then we start winding things down in the run-up to Christmas, reapplying, you know, some of those really good wholesome composts and seaweeds to the farm to get it ready for the next spring and ready to go again. So a typical day would be, yeah, get down the farm in the summer, you know, pretty early, 7-ish. With a bit of luck, I might be able to get a surf in before my local beach, or if not, at the end of the day. But yeah, I'm planting, weeding. No till, no dig actually doesn't create a lot of weed. That's actually one of the good things about no till is you are just working a lot with the plants and not having to like fight weeds off from around them. Watering, obviously, like with no dig, you're using a lot less water than conventional systems because that mulch soaks up the water.
Right.
So your plants aren't drying out enough. And like a lot of, you know, horticulture farms would have problems with. Then a little bit of hoeing, and I might put some more plants out. I might prep some ground for a new bed. I'm not doing like dawn till dusk.
Right.
It's hard work, but I'm not like burning the midnight oil.
I'm sure your vegetables must taste a lot better.
Most people have said our veggies taste brilliant. And yeah, I think they taste really great. And I think, you know, any veg that is organic, you know, compared to like conventional veg is going to have a whole lot more crunch to it. And, you know, I think the issue is, you know, if you can get veg into people's households, you know, in a day rather than a few weeks, because a lot of our veg does, you know, is transported over quite a long period of time because it's coming from all across the world. You are benefiting from, you know, fresh produce. So, yeah, I think it tastes epic. Vegan veg is the vegan veg is the best veg.
I love on your packaging how it says no blood, no bones, no shit. It's awesome. Does organic farming have blood, bones, and shit?
Yes. Yeah, it's quite often will have. So, okay.
So yeah. That's the difference between vegan organic and regular organic.
That's the main difference. A lot of organic farming is either supporting animal agriculture in some way. You know, a lot of organic vegetable farms, maybe mixed farms. Yeah, they may have cows alongside or sheep alongside their horticulture operation. But yeah, I mean, they're quite reliant on animal inputs, the manures, the bone meals, the blood, you know, as part of the growing. So yeah, those are inputs that, yeah, we would avoid at any cost.
It's really making me wonder if there is a veganic farm that comes here to New York. I mean, there's a lot of CSAs and organic farmers, but I don't know if there's I've never even thought about, is there a vegan one?
Yeah, I think you may be scratching your head a little bit on that one, but I might be surprised. There may be somewhere up in the Catskills or somewhere like that. All kinds of stuff goes on up there. So
just talking to you makes me like really, really want to switch.
Yeah.
And so we need a lot more of these.
We do need a lot more of these. I think it's doable, but it's like factory farming. You know, it came in post-war. Everyone was told, you know, if you want to farm animals, this is what you got to do. And they didn't really question it. Only now that it's starting to crumble, thank goodness, that, you know, they're starting to realize there's a whole new world out there. And of course, there is, you know, some good projects that are, you know, helping farmers transition. My good friend Leah over at Mercy for Animals, she's been very involved with the transformation program there, trying to get, you know, broiler chicken farmers into hemp and grains. And we've got a few projects like that here as well. But they're like bigger scale projects, quite focused on like grains, cereals, legumes. Whereas I think the smaller scale sort of fruit and veg operations lend themselves a bit better to like CSAs. I think one of the good things about COVID was we did have a little bit of a scare around food, didn't we? Because,
yeah,
you know, we weren't able to get stuff. You know, supermarkets were kind of closing their doors a little bit. People were panicking about where they were going to get food. You know, food wasn't getting onto the shelves because of distribution. And what did they do? Well, they started buying packs of seeds. You know, if they have a little garden space, they were like, yeah, I'm going to give this a go. I think when I was talking earlier about like food security, about what's coming around the corner, you know, with all these issues around climate, biodiversity, aging farming population, etc. You know, people just, you know, if they've got a little bit of a green space, whether it's a balcony on a fifth floor skyscraper or, you know, a little backyard space, they tried growing for themselves and they got a lot of benefit out of it. There was quite a lot of good stuff coming for the soul from that. Yes. You know, the type of project that I'm doing is a little extension of that. You know, not everyone's able to, you know, grow everything that they need to sustain them in their back garden, but they might want to, you know, support a vegan farmer like me who's able to do it for them, you know, essentially be their farmer. And that's what the type of growing schemes that we're developing are based upon.
And so after spending 20 years kind of really in every kind of horrible animal agriculture, animal exploitation, you were very focused on what was happening to animals. Were you actually paying much attention to how we were growing our food, the vegetables and fruits? Or has this all kind of come to you since you've been doing this?
I definitely learned a lot because of essentially what I was doing was infiltration. So I was getting to understand my adversaries, if you like. Mm-hmm. And what made me a better campaigner and a better investigator was not just going into farms to document, it was going into farms to, so how do you do this? Where do you get your money from? Who are your investors? Where's your antibiotics coming from? How much of them are you using? Those were all elements that were vital to kind of campaign success further down the line. And I think I was definitely aware of a lot, the environmental issues, the migrant labor issues linked to, essentially a slave trade. And I've done a little bit more thinking since, and I have learned a little bit more as well. And I've kind of joined up the dots. And, I don't want to be fanatical and say, we're all doomed from our food perspective. But I think we do have to be a little bit careful of what's coming on the horizon. I think we do have to think a little bit harder about our health in terms of very, highly processed vegan alternatives. And, I think if you want to save money, we could do not much better than return to, a whole food diet. It's cheap and it's the best thing you could eat.
And you feel so much better.
Yeah. Coupled with, keeping active and getting out there and being physical and mentally challenged.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, in the way that COVID kind of unveiled a lot of what's happening in factory farms to a lot of people who had never paid any attention to it, I think it's our food system in general is starting to get, the curtains are getting pulled back.
We just had our first human case of bird flu today.
I saw that.
Yeah, I mean,
and are people freaking out?
Do you know what? It's running. I'd say it's running 2 or 3 pages in the newspapers. It's not a lead story. 1 or 2 more cases, it might start heading that way. But yeah, we've had these conversations before, and you've had them probably more than anyone with all your guests. Yeah. But these pandemics and our links to food, and particular animal agriculture. It could be the thing that, makes a little vegan farmer like me become, a sort of a medium-sized farmer in the future. Who knows?
It's true. It's true. I hope it doesn't have to happen that way.
No. No, no.
I don't know. It feels like whatever you do, Rich, you kind of just go all out at some point.
Yeah, and exactly.
So I think you might be a medium-sized farmer pretty soon. Yeah. And also, the reason I keep asking about other farms and other farmers is because I seriously think this needs to grow. I mean, this needs to, we need these.
Yeah, we do. And I think more and more people, if they see that, farming could provide, a livelihood for them, would look to it. And there's certainly in the UK, we are seeing some more younger entrants coming into market gardening. So, if it can provide, a life where you can, live comfortably, work hard, stay physically active and fit and have good health, which I think it can offer all those, then I think it might be a bit more attractive. The problem is getting hold of land to do it. Right. Because so much land is in the hands of just a few people. And again, this is another big thing that we I think have to try and buck the trend on, because and so much food, it's 60% of our food in the UK is produced with subsidy. So it's a completely artificial, when you break down the costs of food, to people, animals, planet, health, environment, I just don't know how we're doing what we're doing. It just doesn't make any sense at all. And the way that we do it, because all we're doing is taking. We're taking from the soil. We're taking from the, the margins of the fields, the forests, you know, it's all take, 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 take. And, you know, we're not putting it back. And we're getting a much bigger planet. There's a lot more of us. We've got to have a real radical think on how we're going to do this, because it isn't sustainable.
No, it's not. Well, you're doing your part. I'm glad you are. Next time I'm in the UK, I'd like to come see your farm.
Come see the farm. Yeah, I'll have a lovely selection of veggies for you to try. And
I can't wait. Yeah. And in the meantime, I'm going to find a vegan farmer here.
I'll look
out. Who delivers to New York City. Yeah, let me know if
you put the word. I'll put the word out amongst the few and see if we can find someone.
Rich, thank you so much. It's really nice to talk to you again. And you do. You look happy. You look healthy. You look totally restored.
You're lovely to talk with you again, Beth. Thanks a million.
To learn more about Rich and to learn about vegan farming, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you would like to support Species Unite, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Bethany Jones, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.